Okay, welcome to our G4 Tanya wide open. So because it's wide open, I want to start on something completely different. I just wanted to mention something that a beautiful demonstration explains to us what Chassidus is very deeply. Oh, you're also here. Shalom Yo, just in time.
Alright.
So, I was trying to be fashionably late.
Talking
about just in time.
Yeah, just in time.
Yeah, good job, right?
We were just late enough to still be fashionably late. That's okay. So we're going to talk about the taking one paper towel again, yeah? Mm-hmm. But in a completely different context. Very different context.
Same paper towel?
Could be. So this is in my shul. In Sanhedrin, where I daven mincha, they've got a paper towel dispenser, yeah? And they've written on the paper towel dispenser in Hebrew, but basically something like, please don't take bli cheshbon. I don't know how you'd say that in, you know, don't gratuitously take paper towels. You know, like sometimes, you know, you take and you pull out, you know, like, you know, yeah. And you just like go like that, and you throw in the bin. So obviously, the gabbai has gotten upset by this, and he wrote a little note saying, "Don't take without cheshbon." So there's three responses to that, yeah. And it beautifully demonstrates the idea of a rasha, a beinoni, or a tzaddik, depending on who you're talking, and then a chosid. So a rasha obviously just wouldn't care, and he'd take as he did before. Him, there's no, all there is him, so there's no tzibui, there's no request, there's nothing. The tzaddik or the beinoni, like when we're talking about the tzaddik in this context, we're talking like in the Mishnah in Avos, when it says that the sheli sheli v'shalach shalach 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 is a beinoni, and then it said sheli sheli v'shalach sheli, that's a rasha. And sheli shocha and shalach shocha, that's a chosid. So we're talking in that bechina. So we're talking about beinoni or tzaddik, however you want to call that. The middle guy, he will not take bli cheshbon. He'll take 2, 3, 4 tissues, whatever, you know, whatever he needs. And the chosid will take one. What does that explain to you? What do you? How do you, that is? It's an amazing, like, not analogy. Like it describes the three different mindsets so beautifully. Why? So the Russia, there's only him, yeah? So he sees it says, don't take without a cheshbon, his loich partner. The Beinoni, let's call him the Beinoni, yeah? The Beinoni, well, to him, there's a law. Yeah, the law says, don't take without a cheshbon. So I'm not going to take without a cheshbon. That means I'll take, you know, 3, 4, 2, 3, 4. Yeah? The chassid, there isn't a law. There's someone who gave the law. There's not a tzivoy, there's a matzava. You with me? So the chassid is there thinking, not, okay, you said don't take without a cheshbon. I can feel where you're really coming from. You're the gab of the shul. You've got all of these expenses to pay for, and it's mamash driving you nuts, yeah? So I'm going to take one, and it might not be mamash enough, but it's going to basically do the job. It'll be okay for me. You hear the difference? To the beinoni, there was a tzivui. To the chosid, there was a matzaveh. Completely different matzias. It's a completely different thing. You know what I'm saying? That's what a chassid is. The chassid is searching for the Rabbeinu Shloim in the mitzvah. The mitzvah to him is, it's not a means to an end. It's like, I can't even think of a really crass example. It's really like ghastly to say. I'm not going to say it.
Now you should definitely say it.
I wish I could think of another example.
With a bullet like that.
Well,
they build up like that.
Yeah.
I think it's just fascinating that somebody will look at a sign on a dispenser and walk away with a total different hashkafa of how the world works and how I fit into that picture. I applaud you. It's just, you know, people can go by life and not even stop for a second, let alone a towel dispenser.
That's
and walk away as well. I could take something out of it that changed my attitude.
That's how life, that's what life is here for. Exactly the point.
Some people run through the flowers, they don't even see flowers.
Exactly. But so maybe you're saying now, you're thinking in mind, so that means mitzvahs are a means to an end. Yeah, the end is Hashem. It's not
that's why achara with mitzvah can be even better, bigger than the mitzvah.
Why?
Because achara, you're connecting to the mitzvah. It's not even, you know what I'm saying? It's something extra. It's something, it's beyond the command.
So that's the idea of the chassid is lifnei mishur hadin means he's trying to understand what who Hashem is, and there's lots of, like we said, if you just care about the halacha, yeah, then you can walk through life and it can be something separate to you. You know, there's, you know, if it depends how much halacha you learn, because there is halacha for like most situations, in every situation. But when you're a chassid, yeah, and again, this doesn't mean anything like this. This is the chassid that the Ramchal was talking about. This is what real chassid is actually is you're just searching for the Rabbeinu Shloim. In every mitzvah, in everything you're learning, in every interaction you're having, you just want reality. And that's this idea of when you see the law is don't take towels without cheshbon. If you're connected to the law, then you'll take a couple of towels. But if you're connected to the one who's writing the law, then you'll take just one towel, the bare minimum that you need mamash. So, I wanted to answer, there's a really interesting Mishnah, and pick it up. It says, So it says like this, Abba Midas Ba'odun. There's four midas in a man. Ha'omer sheli sheli u'shochach shelach. Yeah, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Zoi mida beinonis. That's the mida of a beinoni. Yeah? Very reasonable. And then there's a yesh oimim zoi mida stoim. Which is a bit like, that's okay. We'll say it quickly enough so you don't have to bother too much about that. Sheli shelach u'shochach sheli ama oretz. So what's mine is yours, what's yours is mine, that's an Am Oretz. So that's not really our inyan, but that's the idea of Yishuv Oretz. That's the idea of I scratch your back, you scratch my back. That's how the world needs to be. That will give a kiyum to the world. That's why it's an Am Oretz. Yeah, that's the Umos HaOlam. They need to have that kind of mentality if they can get there. Yeah. And then a Rasha is, sorry, a Chassid Sheli Shelach, Ushachar Shalach, the Chassid, Shili Shili, Ushachar Shili, Rasha. Yeah, what's mine is mine, what's yours is mine is a Rasha. I want to understand this inyan of Midas Stoim. What's the Havamina that's Midas Stoim? What's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. That's a very reasonable Hashgafa. Yeah,
because it leads to Stoim, that's right. They were so meticulous on that Stoim, but yet they were so meticulous about the div that they took less than a shavakruta, right? That's what the stein did.
You mix some stories. That's with the door flugger.
Right.
With Sadoim, the inyan was, one guy would have a candle, yeah? Another guy would ask him to light the candle, and the guy went, what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine. Get your own candle, get your own fire.
And that doesn't diminish from the first person.
So now you have to ask the question. That it's right, this is my candle, yeah? Get your own fire. Why should I give you my fire? And you're like, but it's not going to take anything from you. Okay, but what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. What's wrong with that? I mean, it's intrinsically wrong, yeah?
There's no connection with anything. Everybody's separate from each other.
There's a deep connection. There's an almost divine connection between the Sodomite, whatever you want to call him, the Sodomi, and the actual Gezeira. This is the point, and this is what I wanted to talk about. This is the idea about this idea who cares about the law. He cares about the law, but he's missing the mitzvah. He cares about the tzivoy, but he's missing the mitzvah. Yeah? It's like doing what your wife, like following the letter of the law according to what your wife says to you, even though they always say it in code, you have to decipher it anyway. So, but whatever she says to you, you do. But you're not interested in her. You're not trying to understand what she really wants. Yeah, she might say like this, and you'll do it, but that wasn't really what she wanted. Yeah, she wants more. She wants something else, but you're not bothered with that. So the ultimate level of this idea of connecting to the law. See, what's the point of the point of law is that the society functions in a healthy way. Yeah. So the law isn't an end unto itself. The law is there to help society function. When you've got a candle and you won't give a candle to somebody else, that means that you've taken the law as being an end unto itself. You've actually turned the law into Elohim Acherim.
Became religious.
Yeah, bidyuk. That's Midastoyim. You turned the law into something as an end unto itself. But if you're really, it's like I'll tell you a funny story. I was flying to Chicago, and I was davening shachris, yeah? And the whole aeroplane's asleep. Everyone's asleep, yeah? I'm in Tallis and Tefillin, and I'm by the back, and there's one of the little fold-down chairs. And I turn around to the guy there. I said, do you mind if I just sit there? He's like, I'm just going to be standing here otherwise, yeah? So he can't sit there.
It's the law.
So he called over, kudos to him, they actually called over someone bigger than him. And she was also like, no, sorry. So I'm just going to stand here, whatever. I was like, this is more dangerous. I mean, what happened, when you have an employee, there'll be gedarim that you have to put, but you want your employee to be able to tell you what you really want from your employee is to understand what you genuinely want.
That's dangerous though, because everybody has a different understanding of what's
understood.
Right.
Understood, but really what you
you
want.
You get in the airplane, you open the window, like, you know, you want some fresh air.
Understood.
Open a window.
Understood, but what you want as an employee, forget the logistics of how it's applied, yeah. But as an employee, as an employer, you want your employee to be able to, like you would turn around and say, look, I see in this situation, yeah, you'd want them to do that with the cheshbon and be able to put the thing together because they understand you. They're connected to you, not to the tzivoy. So in Sodom, where we saw that they turned the actual tzivoy into an avodah zarah, was with the inyan of the candle. That was the law in Sodom. Was mine's mine, what's yours, yours. Well, the candle thing now causes you an existential philosophical question. It's my candle. Now, is that my mine, yours, yours? Is that something to help society function? Or is that a god?
Mm-hmm.
So they turned that into a god. That's Midas Sodom. So it could be Midas Beinoni, or it could be Midas Sodom. It depends. You'll only know in the candle situation. Because if the guy's got a sandwich and the other guy wants a sandwich, he's like, what's mine's mine, what's yours, yours. I'm pretty hungry myself.
Sense.
That's a Benoni. That's you're not a rusher. I got a sandwich, you want a sandwich, it's my sandwich. Sorry. I'll let you watch me eat it if you want. But when you've got something that won't affect you in any way whatsoever, and you still hold that law. Now you see that the law has become something unto itself, and that's called Elohim Acherim.
I do think by Stein, I don't think I'm totally off, but I think by Stein it says that when they use the courts to pervert justice, that's when Hashem said no. So it was using the law itself. It was so dedicated. This was the Elohim.
Yeah. Elohim. Elohim Acherim.
Right, it was about the girl, like getting divorced or something.
Right.
Stretch.
That the point is that the point is when you separate, you can separate anything. Anything can become Elohim Acherim. Anything can be separated. Even a mitzvah, if you take the mitzvah, or even learning Torah, if you take it away from the Rabbeinu Shloilem, that needs to get worked out. You see that from and it can become if a person isn't aware of the idea of the, we spoke about this, was it last week? I can't remember, the idea of the person behind the name. Yeah? You have a name, but you're not your name. Yeah? This is actually a good segue into Perek 4 of the Tanya. The way to the person is through the name. What can you say about the person? You can't actually say anything about the person. Got a sitter here. We can say Brukshe Oma. We say Brukshe Oma. Brukshe Oma Vahaya Oilam Bochum.
That's almost literally the first share you gave us.
This is so important.
You remember that?
Yeah. This is like the first, this is Yiddishkeit 101. So the first thing we say is, Baruch Sha'om of Ahaya Ha'olam Baruch Hu. Yeah, blessed is the one who spoke and the world was. Blessed is he. Yeah, there we go. Baruch Oseh, gracious. I didn't say that, I said a little differently. Baruch Oseh, gracious. Baruch Oseh, Baruch Oseh, Kayim. By the way, Paro, if you look in Rashi, he is Oseh, V'loy Oseh, V'goyzeh, V'loy Kayim. Yeah. Baruch Mochem al Oretz, Baruch Mochem al Brios, Baruch Shalem Shachar Toiv Reyav, Baruch Chai La'ad, Baruch Chai Netzach, Baruch Poide U'matzil, Baruch Shemoy. You can talk about someone's name forever, but about them, Baruch Sha'om of Ahaya Oilam Baruch Hu. Finished. Nothing you can say about that. There's nothing you can say about him. About his name, you can talk about that forever. Talk about that forever. That's what he has. That's what he does. That's how he behaves. That's how he thinks. But the person themselves, there's nothing to say about that. It's like we said about the black part of the eye. What's there to describe about that? It's just round. It's just black. Nothing to say about that. When a person doesn't know...
That at the core, in other words, you have the devotion, right? And it's almost like when a person dies. It's obviously when a person dies that... You do talk about the shamans and everything, but at their core, it's just an existence. Is that what you're saying?
At the core, there's the person. The person is you. If you want to call it something, maybe you could call it a ratzon. That would be already a concession to what it is. But it's just pashut. It's a simple unity. That person has a seichel. Yeah. That person.
That's all attributed to the name.
That's all name. That's all already in the world of name. It's 100% the world of name. So. You remember the name for sure, but when you relate to somebody, that's called face to face. Is I just say you, your name dissolves. But the irony is, we spoke about this, is the only way that I can talk to you without a name is when your lowest aspect of what you are is in front of me, i.e. your goof. Without your goof in front of me, I can't relate to you beyond the name. You with that? That's crazy. That's a crazy paradox. The lowest aspect of who you are is the gateway to you, mamash. And the minute that goes away from me, all I can do is talk about your name.
That's how Hashem made the Teva, too. Everything comes, not Teva, but like in Ruchnias, everything comes from the low place.
That's exactly the Inyan. This is the prosdor to the Metraklin. This is the gateway to Hashem. So I wanted to mention that idea about Chassidus, because that is what Chassidus is. The way I've understood it, it's really important to understand that Chassidus is not screaming out to Hashem. Chassidus is not learning deep Kabbalah. Chassidus is not Sigufim. Chassidus isn't even being really nice to people. Chassidus is relating to reality on a level of face-to-face, meaning I'm looking for you, Rabbeinu Shlomo. I'm looking for reality, mamash, and you'll see that you'll start to chap, like that there is. When you really chap Hashem, you know, just for example, you're walking down the street, yeah? You know that Hashem really likes humility, yeah? Moshe Rabbeinu is Ish Anav Ma'oy. So you know Hashem likes humility. And on a basic level, humility or guile would be, I own the street. I remember when I must have been about 12 years old, yeah? I'm walking across the street in Harrow as a kid, a place in London, and this guy, kind of gangster style kid, you know, older kid than me, he walks, and you know how you get into that thing where you go like that, and then you go like that, and they do the same, yeah? So I went one way, he went that way. I went the next way, he went that way. He just threw me out of the way and walked straight through. Yeah? That was such guyver. Yeah, I'll never forget that. So we know Hashem likes humility. So when you're walking down the street, you can just be a little bit to the side of the midrucha, the sidewalk. Walking close to the wall. That's you realize that I'm just giving you, well, we spoke about this with the paper towel, with all the different things, but once you're connected to him and he's the first thing in your mind, yeah, and how do you know about him? It's through halacha. But once you've started to really put the pieces together and you started to really see what he values, then you, with every conversation you're having with someone, with every place you're walking to, with every time you're eating, with everything you're doing, yeah, you're relating to him, mamash. That's a very, very accessible. It's very accessible. It's not like big avoiders. It's very accessible. So we're still talking about, we're in chapter 4 of the Tanya, yeah? And we are speaking about levushim, the levushim of the soul. So we said that the body is a very external part of who you are, yeah? In the analogy, the body is like the shoes, and the amount of your body that goes into your shoe, that's the amount of you that fits into your body, so to speak. Yeah, that's the mashal. But then there's something even more external to you than your body, which is your clothes. Yeah. And this is really amazing, because this is really where the relationship takes place. Not only your relationship with Hashem, but your relationship with everyone, because that's really, it's the same thing, really, to be honest. So let's say that your father wants to watch you dance. I used to give the example, I used to say that your father wanted you to get him a newspaper.
Shoes.
What?
Shoes.
Get him shoes.
That's what he used to
say. Maybe. No. That's a different idiom. It's a different idiom.
Different.
We're just talking technically to understand how it works when you do mitzvahs. Yeah. So I'm gonna say your father wants you to dance. Yeah. And if anybody can explain to me why I let go of the shoe example, for a very deep reason at the end, then let me know. Yeah. And otherwise I'll say. So your father wants to watch you dance. Yeah. That's what he wants. Now, when you're dancing, you're doing what he wants. Yeah, that's not rocket science. You're putting on his desire to watch you dance as it manifests as you actually dancing in the world would be called his levush of Maisa. Yeah, that's the mitzvah, like he wants you to put on tefillin, yeah? So in this analogy, we're saying your father wants to see you dance. When you are actually dancing, you are actually becoming enclosed in his ratzon. That's what he wants. He wants to see you dance, yeah? Now you're dancing. You are animating his ratzon. You are animating his ratzon. You are energizing something that he wants. What he wants is taking place because of you. That means you're wearing his garments. Do you want to dance? Let's just say no. Yeah, you've got no desire to dance whatsoever. In fact, you're tired. In fact, the last thing in the world that you want to do right now is to dance. But he wants you to dance. So now when you start dancing, you are exclusively doing something that he wants, something that you don't want. That's not your actions. That's called becoming enclosed in his levush of Maisa, his garment of action. You with me?
Yeah. It's also giving the whole, that's the essential purpose of creating the world. Hashem is Ratzon, it's the reaping that the mitzvahs.
This is exactly.
So you, but
what I'm trying to put out, what the important point here is, that you are becoming enclosed in his ratzon. That's what you're doing when you're doing a mitzvah, yeah, with thought, speech, and action. When you're,
is it proper to say that you're giving his ratzon a kiyum?
Yeah. Without you, his ratzon would not be taking place. So that's called animating his ratzon, which would be called becoming pnimi to his ratzon. The pnimius is always what energizes X.
So why not the shoes? Because the shoes would be, he's getting benefit from it. You're doing something that he needs. This is dancing, he doesn't even seem like he's bad. He's any purpose for it. No?
Maybe
shoes
the opposite.
Is because his ratzon is tied to the shoes. It doesn't, right here, the ratzon is tied to the person.
You said
shoes he can get himself. Shoes
that,
he can
that,
get,
you
can get
say
himself.
That.
He wants you to do it, give it up. Dancing,
he doesn't want you to get him the shoes. He doesn't want
he
you to get
the
him the newspaper. He wants the newspaper.
That's what I was saying.
So you're,
right.
So you're, yeah,
right.
Okay. That's the point. But the dancing is actually you. He wants to see
oh,
you dancing. Yeah. So that's a very important point.
A
very important point. So when you're going to get him the newspaper, I always used to say, well, you're becoming enclosed within his garment of action. But you're actually not, because his garment of action is him reading the newspaper. He doesn't care about you getting him the newspaper. Whereas when you're dancing, that's actually what he wants. Now, it's interesting to work at, to hear the chiluk between Lima Torah and Maisa Mitzvah. Yeah? This is already getting into chapter like 23 and chapter 8 as well. But it's worth saying now. Your dad wants you to dance. He wants to watch you dance. That's what he wants. Now tell me, how do you feel when you're dancing for him? He might not even be looking. It might be videoed that he's going to look at it another time, yeah?
Well, it depends on the time. Sometimes you want to dance, sometimes you don't want
to
dance.
But forget what you but I'm saying, how do you feel in your relationship to your dad? You're not really experiencing your dad right now. If you use your mind, yeah, maybe. But right now, you're just dancing. I could be dancing for my dad, I could be dancing for my wife, I could be dancing for myself. I'm just dancing, yeah? He's looking at me.
You're not dancing just to dance.
But say this,
right.
How are you feeling when you're dancing?
You're subjugating your desire to whatever your father wanted.
There could be, but the Lemaisa, there's no actual interaction right now with me. My father kind of overwhelms who I am, and I'm just doing what he wants.
Right.
Yeah, there's no necessarily any kind of feeling.
So here comes the difference between a Beinani and a Chassid. A Beinani is going to just look at the Tziva and dance, right? The Chassid is going to be thinking about his father.
Very good. That I'm going a different direction, that's 100% true. But what's the difference now when your dad sits next to you, he puts his arm around you, and he says to you, you know how much I love watching you dance? And you know when you do that move, when you like spin, and then you do the splits, and you jump back up again, and you do the Michael Jackson thing with the hat?
Yeah, for sure.
That's actually unbelievable. And he goes on, how close do you feel then? You're not actually dancing, Bichlal.
Right.
You're not doing what he wants. He's just telling you about what he wants. That's the difference between learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. The learning Torah, there's an element of doing a mitzvah in learning Torah as well, so don't it gets confusing. But just to understand the idea of the difference between a mitzvah and learning Torah, is learning Torah is a tremendous oineg for the neshama, yeah? But the ultimate oneg for Hashem is when his mitzvahs are taking place. Just like your father explaining to you how he loves how you do this, that move and that move and whatever, yeah? But all he really wants to do is see you dance. The Torah is a perish on the mitzvahs. You can sit there and learn about Kriya Shema until the cows come home, but if you don't say Kriya Shema, it was a different mitzvah. But he wants Kriya Shema, he wants Kriya Shema. You can learn about Tefillin forever, but if you don't do Tefillin, yeah, his ratzon wasn't, there was no kiyum for his ratzon. You see the difference? The relationship that we have, it's actually comparable to the difference in the relationship of a eved to his master and a talmid to his rebbe. It's really interesting because they're two different relationships, yeah? The Evid, the way that Evid relates to his master is he just does what the master says. It's a level of lemaisa, yeah? The Talmud, listening to his Rebbe, it's not lemaisa, it's an inyan of haskala and hagosha, of mind and heart, yeah? He's trying to understand things, he's trying to feel it, etc., yeah? The difference between, so it's a beautiful, I was reading, I was just learning this just recently with Yoel Kahn, is that from the perspective, you've got the Elyon and the Tachton. Yeah, you've got the Mashpi and the Makabel. You've got the Rav and the Adon. Yeah, the Rebbe and the Master. That's the Elyon. And then you've got the Tachton, which is the student and the Eved, and the servant. Yeah? So you've got this two... We've got this matrix going on, yeah? Who gets to express himself more? The master or the Rav?
Who gets to express themselves more?
Whose expression is more accurate, the master or the Rav?
The master. More accurate?
Yeah. What's a more accurate expression of who he is?
Master is no, he can do whatever he wants.
Oh, so you're thinking a different way.
As in relation to the Kamar.
See, the difference is, the Rebbe, if he wants his Talmud to understand what's going on, he has to be mitzamtzem what he knows into very small kalim for this guy to understand, because the Rav's this big and the Talmud is that big. So to get the idea, it's like, you know, when I learn with my chavrusas, if I have a chiddush with like one of my chavrusas, I can just say a whole Inyan that would take me an hour with somebody else, it only takes me a couple of minutes because I don't have to be mitzamtzem anything. Yeah, but if I'm giving over to Talmidim, then everything has to be mitzumtzem. So I'm constricting myself to, and I have to hold back a lot of stuff as well because it will overwhelm you, or it won't make sense, etc.
So the
Rebbe is having to express himself on a much lower level. The Adon, the master, he wants this, he wants that. There's no... That's it. It's a complete... The Rebbe, the Adon asks him to do whatever he wants. And because it's a level of Maisa, there's no Kalim that are... He doesn't have to constrict himself to the Kalim of the Moichin and of the Midas. Yeah, it's just the Maisa. Then he can just say to you, do what you want. So that Adon gets the full expression, yeah? But who's
the flip?
The Tachton's the flip. Why?
Because the Eved is just, okay, from what we learned, it's just about the command. It's not
the
about the beyond. With the Talmud, it's getting the machshava of the master and making it yours.
It goes into your moich. It's like, what's it? My action. I'm just doing this. What is that? You know, where's my connection to the Adam? I'm just doing this action. Yeah. You're completely buttled to him, and you're basically like his hands. Okay.
Safsul.
What? Safsul. Like a...
Safsul. I mean, that's connection.
Oh, Safsul. But you're like his hands. Yeah? Like, what kind of feeling do your hands have? Whereas the Talmud... The Talmud now is actually experiencing the Rav on a level of intellect and Hagosha. So although he's experiencing an infinitely smaller element of the Elyon, the Eved is not experiencing the Elyon, but he's privy, so to speak, to the whole Elyon. You hear the dichotomy? Our relationship with the Shem is Eved and Talmud, or Eved and Ben. We're meant to be having both of those relationships. That's learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. Is learning Torah is the fi your kalim, the fi your seichel, the fi your midas, yeah? And you have to strive, that's very important. But remember, when you understand something about Hashem, or when you feel something about Hashem, it's a minuscule ha'ara mamash, it's a ziv, 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 ever, ziv, ever, ziv, yeah? But when you're doing his ratzon, that's him mamash. That's him mamash. So that's one of the inyanim of that's how we need to relate to Torah and mitzvahs. And we need to have both. There's milas and chesronos on either side, and that's a full relationship with Hashem is as a talmid, or in the lashon of chassidus, more like a ben, yeah, a ben and an eved, yeah, because a ben as well is really an inyan of chinuch, yeah. When you're like one of the things that I found works with children is children don't appreciate any nuance, any sophistication. Yeah, so one of my sons who I saw was having an assignment with Guyver, I just created a mnemonic. Okay, I didn't actually hear it from someone else, that we want to be a learn it all, not a know it all. Yeah, and I made that our motto, you know, and he's that's his motto. If you asked him, what does your daddy say to you? What are you? He said, I want to be a learn it all, not a know it all. Simple, piffy.
Learn it all, not a know it all.
That's so simple, quick. It rhymes in a sense. It's something that a kid can hop onto. Or another kid I was. You want to be a savla, not a kaptan. Yeah. Again, another super easy mnemonic to just hop. It becomes your mother. I want to be a savla, not a kaptan. You look at your kid getting angry. You look at him and say, savla. And in his mind, he said, I want to be a savla, not a kaptan. Yeah, that's a kaptan, somebody who's...
Strict.
Makpil. How do you... wait, there's a good word for it.
Corporal.
No,
they're all good. There's a really good one. Either way, you get the idea. Strict is the best thing, I think. So by creating the role of a parent is to machanach your children, meaning you need to get big ideas into your kids that they can't be soivul. Your job as a parent is to take these huge ideas that have taken you decades to learn and be matzamsen them down into a few words and get them into your kid's head. You could describe being a parent as that. So the relationship of parent and Talmud, parent and Ben and Rav and Talmud is a very similar relationship, and that was what was I going to say? That was Mark Twain had a famous quote. He said something like this: "When I was 13, I could hardly stand being with my father. He was such an idiot." He said, it was amazing to see how much growing up he had done by the time I was 21. I love that. Because your kids can't appreciate who you are. And they shouldn't. They can't. They can't do that. So your goal is to be mitzamsen yourself. But that means that the child is only able to receive a ha'ora of you. But when he does something for you, that's you. That's really you. And that's the inyan of the levushim. Yeah, because the Tanya says a really surprising thing. He says that the levushim of the nefesh lakis, the thought, speech, and action of the nefesh lakis, are infinitely higher than the nefesh ruach neshama of the nefesh lakis. He doesn't speak about high yechidah, but the actual he's basically saying that the garments of the soul are higher than the soul themselves. Which doesn't make any sense, because how can garments be higher than the mensch? Garments are buttle to the mensch, yeah? So, the ideas like this, I've understood it, is that the garments of the nefesh lakis are thought, speech, and action in tayyag mitzvahs. Torah and mitzvahs. That's Hashem's expression, which is behavior. Thought, speech, and action. That's his behavior. Hashem and the Torah are one. Yeah? Like a man and his behavior. Like you can't, although you can trump your behavior, the goal is to be Torah Kaboro. The goal is to be that your behavior, if you're a worked out person, you and your behavior are not, there's no steer between them. They're one and the same. Yeah? That's what we're striving to do in this world. Yeah? To behave like our soul wants us to behave. So when the neshama, when a Jew does Torah and mitzvahs, he's becoming enclosed in the Ratzon Hashem. That's what Hashem wants, and that's why the garments are infinitely higher than the soul itself. Not the essence of the soul, but from the neshama, the chaya, nefesh chaya, nefesh ruach neshama of the soul, which is the created elements of the soul. Yeah, the actual actions of the soul are ultimately higher, infinitely higher, because that's the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, and that's why the Mishnah says that one moment of Torah and of tshuva and ma'asim tovim in this world is worth all of the kol ruach of Olam Haba. One sec, what's the Mishnah? Yeah. So it's interesting because the Mesis Shem brings this is Rabbi Yaakov in Pirkei Avos, yeah? In the fourth parak. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, this is the famous thing that the Messiah Shem brings, sorry. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, Ha'olam Hazeh Adoyim El Prozdor Bifnei Olam Haba. Yeah, it's like a corridor before Olam Haba. Yeah, Haskein Atzmecha B'Prozdor, fix yourself in the antechamber, they say, the corridor, whatever. Chishtkanez L'Turaklin, so you can enter into the palace. So from that, we learn in the superficial reading of the beginning of Messiah Shem, is this world is just something you're trying to get through, to get to Olam Haba, which from what I've received from my Rebbe is the ultimate mistake you could ever make. And how do you know it's a mistake? Because you see the next Mishnah, which is not brought so often, which is brought in the Tanya. And this isn't also, this is the Havamina of the Messiah Shem. If you read the Messiah Shem, he really gives two Havaminas and then gets to the point of reality. And I don't know how it happened that the Minog Olam was to take the first Havamina as reality. That's what we're here for Olam Haba, which is, the way I've understood it is so wrong and so damaging, because now...
Wasn't the focus between the Rambam and other people, right?
It's in the Dhamma.
To what?
I forgot. Doesn't the Rambam, like, there's a big focus
about the way to Olam Haba.
Right.
So... I'm giving you over what I learned, what my Messiah says. Yeah, this is my Messiah. So my Messiah focuses on the second Maimah from Rabbi Yaakov. He says, "Hu haya oimer," and this is what we just explained here. Tshuva umaisim tovim. Sorry, yafesh sha'achas. 1 hour of tshuva and maisim tovim ba'olam hazeh. Mikol chayei ha'olam haba. Is worth more than all of the life of the world to come. That's a very problematic statement. After the first thing he just said, which is this world is just a prozdor to get to the palace. Yeah, this world's a prozdor and the palace is Olam Haba. Now he's turned around and says 1 hour of tshuva and ma'asim tovim is yafeh, is nicer, better, more beautiful, whatever, than all of the life of Olam Haba. And then he says, Yafesh Sha'acha Shal Koyrus Ruach Bo'olam Haba, but the Koyrus Ruach, which you have to understand what that means, 1 hour of Koyrus Ruach, which is like the experience of Olam Haba, is worth more than all of the life of this world. Mekol Chayei Olam Hazeh. All of the life of this world. And this is exactly what we've just explained.
Paradox.
Well, not really. That is really not a paradox, because he says that the tshuva and ma'asim tovim is worth all of the life of this world.
Tshuva and
ma'asim
tovim dafka.
Tshuva and ma'asim tovim dafka is worth more. That sounds like mitzvahs, yeah? Tshuva and ma'asim tovim is worth all of the life of the next world. But the koras ruach, which is quite a low level, that's an experience. Now that's worth all of the life of this world. Meaning the experience of this world is nothing compared to the experience of that world. But tshuva and ma'asim tovim is worth more than all of that world.
It's not an experience.
It's not an experience. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That's my whole message. That's what I came to the world to teach everyone. Get over this idea of need. Get over this idea of experience. It's killing us all. Because Hashem's fiddled reality that there's no experience left anymore. So we're plotting for just... Give me one little moment when I feel I'm in front of you. Please Just let me feel loved. Let me feel something. And the poem says, you've got it all wrong, man. That's for the next world. You'll get it. You'll have it coming out your ears. You'll be Shem, enough, enough. Of me. Give me some time out, yeah? This world, you can have me, mamash. Me, mamash. That's the mitzvahs. That's the Adon giving his... You with me? You actually become him. You don't experience him. You become him. So that's what this perek is telling us in Tanya. That the mitzvahs, the way we actually become one with Rabbeinu Shloim, and this is also the way we become one with our wives as well, and with our children, is through levushim. The merging of the me and you has to take place through levushim. It has to take place through garments. And this is the mistake that Rav Manis tells me, said many, many, many times, is the statement, I love you. That's, for me, when I tell you that I love you,
right.
Yeah, that shouldn't really make much of a difference to you. It only makes a difference if you're on some kind of egoic level, yeah? But it's your love for me that should really make a difference to you.
Right.
It's my love for you, it's your love for me. Where are we meeting there? No. It's when I wear your begadim. When you can sit there and tell your wife that you love her, telling your wife that you love her something, that's an actual speaking, yeah? But feeling like that wall, emotion of your love for your wife, just sitting there like gawking at her and like all mushy over her, yeah? And there's a sink full of washing up sitting there. She's like looking at you, like looking at the washing up, and you're like, just gazing at her, and she's like that, and you don't notice the washing up because you're just gazing at her. And then eventually you get up.
Eventually you wash the dishes.
You get up and you wash the dishes, and she says, "Thank you so much. That means so much to me. The fact that you just changed his diaper, you washed the dishes, or you cleaned the toilet, or you did whatever, yeah." That's where you actually merge with each other. That's where the merging takes place. So we're looking for these, you know, like these experiences. You're like, you don't understand. It's in much more mundane. The real yichud is taking place on a much more mundane level. Just like I said, you can't say you to someone if their body isn't standing in front of you. That's the inyan of the prosdor, yeah? So this is, you can read this mission like this. Ha'olam haza doyme leprozdor befnei ha'olam haba. Haskein atzmacha. Fix yourself in the prosdor. What does it mean, fix yourself?
Make a name for yourself.
What?
Like make a name for yourself.
No, the opposite, man. Let go of your name. Fix yourself, meaning lose your own independent agenda. That's what the fixing yourself is. That's fixing yourself. Is removing yourself of the delusion of the fact that you have an agenda separate from Hashem. Like there's Hashem, and I know Torah and Mitzvahs is great, yeah, but I also want to get married, and I also want to have a nice house, and I want to have meaning in my job, and I want to feel connected to you, and I've got all of these agendas, yeah? That's the fix yourself. Meaning realize that yourself is just the detail in his reality. And that's the fix yourself. So that's the avoider of the prosdor. So when the avoider of the prosdor comes earning oilam haba, well, you've just created another agenda for yourself, no? And it becomes, and the real danger, how I've understood it, is that, as we've said, if you're in a back-to-back relationship with someone, meaning I'm in it not for you, for something that I can get from you, like your relationship with the cab driver, yeah? A back-to-back relationship causes greater and greater distance.
It's an
Ava Shatruya Dava. The Dava is what I'm merged with. And you, it's like marrying a woman for money, yeah? If a man marries a lady for money, yeah, then she will be hated. If he doesn't break through that, when you marry somebody, you do have to marry them for something from you. But the avoider of marriage is to get beyond that immediately. But if you're married to somebody and your love for them is tolerant on the fact that they're beautiful or that they're rich or that they're kind or that any of these meters, is that what your love is predicated on, yeah? The relationship will actually grow. It's crazy. The relationship will grow for, because you feel like, I mean, I love her. She's amazing. I can tell you, you can sit there with a pen and paper and write for hours about how wonderful she is, yeah? And she hates you because she feels like she doesn't exist. Why? Because you're so caught up in this checklist of all of her qualities. What about her? You know what I mean? That causes a greater and greater rehook. Not that you can't appreciate her qualities, enjoy her qualities, and connect to her through her qualities, but you're not, when you're not aware of the actual mensch, who's the baller midas, then that actual relationship is getting further and further apart. And that's what happens when we're in it for Olam Haba. And that's one thing. Really, from my experience, very few people care about Olam Haba anymore, yeah? From my experience, from the kind of people that I meet, generally. But that's the same thing as plotzing for that experience. When Hashem is to you, that meditation, where you just want to have that feeling. So what's God? Well, God is just the tool that I'm using to have that feeling of oneness. Isn't that an avatali badava? You hear the poison, the toxicity, and it's so subtle. It's like, well, what's wrong with that? And it doesn't sound like there is anything wrong with it, but it's absolute. Well,
the problem is being a yesh.
You're not in it. You're not there. Your ultimate bakasha to Rabbeinu Shloim is, Rabbeinu Shloim, help me serve you. Please, just show me what it is you want from me. Give me all the resources that are going to make this happen and make all the opportunities come about that will help me serve you. What else is there to ask? If you're in it for him, what else are you asking? Please, I need a shidduch, I need this, I need good health, I need my kid healed, I need this and this and that and this and that. You could say to Bershom, listen, I hate seeing my child being sick, yeah? It's destroying me. It's mamash destroying me. And I can't see how that can be part of your plan because I can't serve you like this. Yeah, I want my child healed. I want my child healed. But in context of the big picture, it's about how can I serve? Everything always has to come back to how can I serve you? You with me? And then the irony is, yeah, when you can do that, then all these cool experiences start to happen as well. And they just become like something else you can say thank you to him for. She's like, thank you. I don't feel like I deserve to have that just now. That was really, you know, that was really kind. Like, whatever. Everyone knows how these things happen in their life, yeah? But they don't become the point of it, bichlal. The only thing is, all you're searching for is how can I serve? And that's what the mitzvahs are. If it wasn't for the mitzvahs, there'd be no way to serve. Like we said, you know, you speak to the secular guy and say, it's about serving Hashem. And he'll say to you, listen, I'm going to serve Hashem how I want to serve Hashem. And then you give him the moshel that we said about the waiter in the restaurant. You order your food and he comes back with a completely wrong order. And he's, listen, I'm going to serve you the way that I want to serve you, thank you very much. That's not called service. If it wasn't for the mitzvahs, there would be no way of serving God. You could have experiences of God, maybe. But you couldn't serve him. So then there would be no relationship with him. You with me? It's very pasha. It's really pasha. Okay. Any questions? Because that's really perek dalad. And remember, everything that we learn here about how we relate to Ribbono Shel Olam is how we relate to everyone else as well. There's literally no difference. Literally no difference.
I have an unrelated question.
Oh,
another related question.
Said chassid sarfan.
Yeah.
Is flushing them down the toilet considered sarfan?
Yeah.
I was thinking about it because eventually they can go to the ocean. I don't know what I'm saying.
But sarfan also is not such a good idea because, you know, are you sure you're going to. No, but are you sure they're going to get properly burned, whatever? It's. They're going down to us, probably. But that's not the Indian.
Yeah.
But I hear the point. Logistically, what do you do? Lamaisa, what do you do? I mean, I end up biting my nails anyway, which I try to get over.
What do you do? Because it's when you say it's just like a relationship with everybody else, but I don't become the other person. The other person. Do what they want.
Yes.
You are doing what this person wants because it's what Hashem wants you to do.
So Hashem, the way I've understood it is, Hashem wants you to have a relationship with your wife as a hand unto herself.
Somewhere in Brooklyn or something.
The tzivui of relationship with Shalom Bias is I'm not having a relationship with you in context of my relationship to God.
No.
It is, but Hashem wants you to have a real relationship with your wife. You with me? So you have to relate. Yeah, if you pull away all of the graphics, the gumray, well then your wife isn't even there anyway. Yeah? But the tzivui of Shalom Bias is that you're having a relationship with her mamash as an end unto herself. And then what will happen, I think we said this, Rashi says on Eizah Kenegdoi. Yeah, we mentioned this? Yeah, Im Zocha, Eizah. Im Loi Zocha, Kenegdoi Lelocha. If you're zach, meaning there's no avatalui bedava, you're not trying to get something from your wife, yeah, it's about her, yeah, then Aza, you'll find that there will be no hisnagdus. You'll find the hisnagdus will disappear. What? That was by the inyan of the misnagdim. That's the inyan of the misnagdim. It wasn't a fight between the chassidishas and the litvaks. It was a fight between the chassidishas and the misnagdim. It's a completely different thing. So in this generation, you've got lots of Litvaks who are mamash chassidim.
Yeah.
And you've got lots of chassidim who are mamash misnagdim. Yeah? That's the inyan. It's not about this shit. It's not, you can serve God in any lavush and do... What? That's the inyan. It's where's Hashem in the picture? Where's the zichuch of me? How much is it about me getting something from you? Or how much is it just about you? Like our whole sha'if with our wife has to be... Let me know what you want. Like, you know, imagine for your wife's birthday. You know when your wife's birthday starts coming around, yeah? Everyone feels the same thing. Like about a month before, yeah? You start getting that tense feeling, yeah? And like, you're like, you know, you might start davening to a bon shalom to send you some idea. Or usually you just feel like hopeless. Like, I've screwed it up for the past 20 years. Like, you know, and it gets more and more and more tense, yeah? So imagine during that tikkufa, yeah? During that tikkufa, yeah? That your wife's friend, your best friend, somehow gets in touch with you and she sends you a WhatsApp, yeah? With a list. She says, listen, I'm speaking to your wife, yeah? And this is mamash what she wants.
They worked it out.
Yeah? Everything.
The women worked it out.
She gives you a list, a bullet list of all the things she wants, yeah? And she writes at the bottom, if you need any clarification, be in touch. So you like go down the list, you find like the cheapest, best thing that you can find, yeah?
Give them money to your wife and tell her to buy it.
And then you email back the girl, the friend, and you're like, you know, can you give me some more details about this? She says, yes, yeah, so she told me that she wants the pink one and it should be like this, the, you know, the X4 model, whatever, 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 yeah? Imagine your experience of as you're hearing these words. You'd be like this on the edge of your seat, like. And the more detail you can get, the more when it's about her. If it's about having to do something for her, yeah, then it's just you'll get your secretary to just do something and nothing, yeah. But if it's about her, if you're genuinely excited about her, you'll be on the edge of your seat, and with every extra oist that you're reading in this WhatsApp. You'll be more and more. You know what I'm saying? That's the experience should be when you're learning halacha. That's part of the experience of learning halacha. Hashem just laid it all out on the table for you, and you want to get more and more detailed. Yeah, you can get as detailed as you want. Gesundheit, you can go forever. I would recommend not doing that first. I'd recommend getting a big picture.
But it's different when your wife's friend comes and tells you this is what she wants. When your wife's like, this is what I want.
That's what we end up with. Call Moshe.
No. Why is that different?
Because then your wife's telling you what
you want.
You're saying it's better that her friend tells you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's
why Hashem keeps us guessing. I know it is, but you could say the same thing. Hashem keeps us guessing that the friend is the Torah of Mitzvahs. And because if you just knew Hashem, there would be no search, there'd be no seeking, there'd just be a ton of tmidi.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be. It would be like your wife just telling you what to do, as opposed to you. I had that experience one time in one of my wife's birthdays. I thought it was a great guy. I found like I got a rich friend in Efrat who has a swimming pool. Yeah, like a hidden swimming pool. So I did like a whole thing, you know, So we went there. I took my wife there. We had the sauna and the swimming pool and the whole thing. Yeah, and while I was there, I got my secretary to get in the. My office, when we got back to my office, she got a whole burgers bar thing, yeah, with balloons and ribbons and the whole thing. As we walk into my office, it was like, wow. And I look at her face, yeah, as we walk in, and I'm like, she just sits down, kind of like down.
Vegetarian.
Like, what?
She's a vegan.
Sounds good. I was like, what? She was like, no, thank you. And she was trying so hard to like be excited and show her excitement, and it really like came out at the end. It was like, my secretary did this. She hated that. That wasn't something she wanted. Yeah, she didn't want my secretary to spend an hour making my office look beautiful and put out all the things. That was difficult for her. So I've learned that now, but that's the idea of doing it yourself as well. Is the idea of delegation is when something's really, really choshev to you, you don't delegate it. I delegated it in this sense because it was logistically, it made sense, yeah? But you don't delegate something that's mamash choshev to you. That's the person, that's her. That's not having a connection to her, that's not having a connection to things about her. That's having a connection to her through the things about her. That's called being Mala the world. See, if you're just connected to the Tzivui, then where was the Aliyah? But if you're connected to the Metzaveh through the Tzivui, then all of the parts of the Tzivui went to the Metzaveh. That's called Deir Petach Toyim or whatever you want to call that. Him coming down and the world going up is the same. It's the same minion. So that's really the big takeaway of chapter 4 in Tanya, is the inyan of the levushim, and how, although that's a very kind of distant part of you and a distant part of the other, that's where the connection takes place. It's quite amazing. It's like
opposites, like everything else in Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit requires you to have opposites to coexist. It's like you can't understand that.
But what that is doing is the reason why the Rosh Hashanah on one level created it like that is now you are able to bring the world to him. Because the mitzvahs can't take place anywhere else other than this world. So it's so, I don't know if you call it ironic or paradoxical, however, whatever words you want to use for it, but the mitzvahs have to take place in a realm that is the opposite of God. Just as a cute little thing, Sitra Achra and Ein Sof is the same Rosh HaTevah's backwards. Mm. Does God have an opposite? Can't we say that? But if you had to say something, you'd say the opposite of God is Sitra Achra.
It's
the backside of God, but it's the part, it's the chelik of reality that says aniva afsi oid, there's something other than Hashem. That's sitra achra. So is that the opposite of God? Yeah. So our whole avoider is, that's why I say to people, one of the first things I always say that we need to learn, the first thing we need to understand is what klipa is, which is what we've been talking about. Klipa is the way that Rav Ashlag, I'm learning right now about a Sulam, and he calls it the Rotzon Lekabel, which is a really amazing way of summarizing it. A Rotzon Lekabel, yeah, the desire to receive. Yeah, in English I would call it the desire to be. It just wants to be, yeah, as opposed to Kedusha, which wants to not be. It wants to be Nisbatel. Yeah. So klipa is the desire to be. So your survival instinct, yeah, that is the ultimate klipa in the world that you want to be. That is klipa lagamra. So if somebody doesn't know what klipa is, I've said this.
Being left alone.
A yid not understanding what klipa is like a carpenter not knowing what wood is. Because if you don't realize that sitra achra is, when you boil it down, is just a desire to be, well, now what am I doing? Like, what does my yetzer want? So I had guys at my Shabbos table with the Shabbos, yeah? The guy was saying, you know, all your yetzer hara wants is for you not to learn Gemara. That's it. He just doesn't want you to learn Gemara.
Sure didn't get a reaction from him.
So I'm like, wow, you really need to learn about what the yetzer hara is. Because your yetzer hara could, yes, want you to learn Gemara. Yeah? You could sit learning Gemara with your yetzer hara for dozens of years, for decades. Yeah? That's called the Torah becoming a samaves. Why is it called a samaves? Because maves is the opposite of God. Yeah? That's the in your tchias amazing. That's when you'll see at the end of time that really, actually, the closest thing to God is maves. Yeah? That's for another time. But samaves means, why is it a samaves? Is because what it can do is help you become more and more and more. That's sitra achra. If the Torah is helping you become more and more and more, we just said, if that's what the sitra achra wants, it wants to be something, it just wants to be, and once it is, it wants to be more and more and more, like a hippo. You know how hippos work? They have the bull hippo, and they have like a harem of like mummy hippos, yeah? Never ever has there been a bull hippo who said, you know what, I got enough women now, we're done. Just like there was never a business tycoon who said, listen, I got $100 billion now, enough. Yeah? Why? Because you're not dealing with a tither for money, you're dealing with a tither for being. That's what the tither is. So Kolzman, you think the tither is money, or you think the tither is niv, or you think the tither is not learning Torah, or you think the tither is lashon hara, or you think that these are manifestations of the tither, but that isn't the yetzer hara. With me? So Kolzman, we don't realize what the yetzer really wants. We have no idea. We have no idea what we're doing. We don't know the game, and we could be doing mitzvahs, learning Torah, doing mitzvahs, and becoming more and more rachok from the Rabbeinu Shloim. It's a scary thing. But once you've hacked it and you realize that this is the point, is that it's not about me being, it's not about my own agenda. It's about me serving. Now you can be doing anything, and you will be doing anything, and it's all, the whole world is going back to Rabbeinu Shloim. The whole world is going back to Rabbeinu Shloim for your little hands. So to finish off, that is our connection to Rabbeinu Shloim is exclusively through this world. Just like our connection to our wife is through her body. What do I mean? When you're looking at your wife and you're face to face with your wife, you see her goof, but you're not calling her Sari, you're not calling her whatever her name is, yeah? You're saying you. So you're accessing her, the one who has the name, as opposed to the name, through the name, as in through her goof. That's exactly the same as this world. If you want to understand it, LP, the Lashon of Kabbalah, is this world is the Levushim of the Rabbeinu Shloim, yeah? Ze'ampin, is called, so to speak, the goof of the Rabbeinu Shloim. And it's through Za Melubash in this world that you can get to him himself, Yizbarach Mamash, the one without the name, him himself. So it's exactly the same on every strata, it's the same with our children, same with our wives. It's the same game being played again and again. That through the lowest element of the person, you get to the actual person, the Bala Shame beyond the shame. So through the shame, you get to the one, the Bala Shame. And that's
right. You couldn't do without it.
You couldn't do it without it. Without this world, you couldn't become godly.
It's like the very thing you're trying to lose. It's like I just think about a dating. It's like you date your wife. The very things that attracted you, now you're trying to lose them.
Or not be distracted by them. They're distracted. Exactly.
Right.
And that's why it comes out, really, it comes out, you could say like this, is it's in a sense a excuse to have a less impressive wife. If your wife doesn't have unbelievable qualities, yeah, it will make your avoidance, shun, and bias easier in a sense. It's ironic. But it can force you to go beyond the shame. When she's got stunning qualities, you have to work really hard. I'm not saying, you know, the ideal is that whatever it is, whatever you've got, you get to her. But when she doesn't have these stunning qualities, yeah, then it's easier to go beyond the shame. And that's also with your children as well. You have to, and that's one of the inyanim of when you have one kid who's not perfect, yeah? And everyone has that kid, yeah?
I got four.
Yeah. When you have the one kid who's far from perfect, and your other children who are better, so to speak, yeah? I did, what do you call that? With my fingers, yeah, speech marks for people listening in the recording. That when your kids, when your more impressive kids see your relationship with your less impressive kid, that's really helpful. And I say this to my kids as well, when like my kids who are like, you know, flying in yeshiva, I've got kids who are flying in yeshiva, and I've got kids who are flying out of yeshiva, yeah? So when my kids are flying in yeshiva, come back with the petek and the thing and whatever, I'll always say to them, well done, kol hakavod, but you realize that if you didn't do this, I'd still be your father, and I'd still love you. They appreciate that. Because if your relationship to your child is through his qualities and through his behavior, and that's the relationship, then what happened to the child? So it's the same thing on every strata, on every... It's the same thing. I just said one thing, basically. You just can apply it to every... Okay, square.
Oh, yeah.